And these signs shall follow them that believe. In my name shall they cast out devils, they shall speak with new tongues, they shall take up serpents, and if they drink any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them. They shall lay hands on the sick, and they will recover.
Welcome to True Crime on Easy Street. I'm Kelly Turner, not a doctor.
You're not a doctor.
Who are you?
I'm a mediocre journalist. My name is Scott Wright.
And I'm Katie Givens, and I'm not a lawyer.
We are True Crime on Easy Street. We're coming to you from Easy Street Restaurant Bar Performance Hall. Our wonderful, lovely sponsor. We'll get to them later.
Coolest place in town, though.
Really?
I think so. I mean, I'm partial.
I love it.
They pay
I know
me
you're
to
partial.
Say that, but I think it's the coolest place in town.
No, we have a great time there.
They don't pay me
there.
Well to say it, but they pay me
We have a great time there. We love it there. We got a live show there tomorrow night, but by the time you hear this, it will have been yesterday. Yeah. So
breaking
we're not
that
live.
Fourth
we're
wall.
Live on tape. We're live on tape.
We're working on that schedule and how it all works out.
Yeah, that's okay.
I like it.
We'll get there.
It'll be a surprise this way.
We will get there. So thank you for tuning in last week for the Judith Ann Neely case. And we, Scott, we were at a party this weekend.
We were.
And we had someone come up to us and they were like, man, that was a crazy story. And we were like, they're only going to get crazier.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. I know who it was. It was our friend Daniel who had said that he'd listened to it and he was looking forward to it. And I think maybe he even has something that he can contribute to a future show. We told him, we gave him a tease that we're not going to give you guys yet, at least not right now.
Secrets.
But we know what's coming. And Daniel actually is found himself involved in that peripherally, just a little bit.
We are excited about that. We also
I want to hear what he has to say about it.
Me too. Yeah. We also have another friend, Stacy, who has.
We do? Stacy.
We have two friends.
Yes, that's right.
And she wants to be involved in one that she knows a good bit about. So we're excited to collaborate with some folks coming soon this season. This week, we have a new case. This case, as I understand it, has a little bite to it.
Ooh, teaser from Instagram.
Easy joke, and you just went for it, didn't you? Wow.
Our listener is laughing.
They both are. Are you sure we have two at this point?
So tell us a little bit about the case this week. What are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about a case that happened, another case that happened locally. It happened in Sand Mountain, which if you don't know where we are in Northeast Alabama, it's probably 20 miles away. This is specific location in Scottsboro from where we are in Center Alabama, C-E-N-T-R-E. Don't get it wrong like everyone else does.
Probably just a little more than 20 miles, but yes.
All right. But
yes, I like the C-E-N-T-R-E because we're that fancy.
Yes, we have the English spelling.
Fancy stuff here. So this case involves a pastor back in the, it was 1991 when all of this took place, October of 1991. And it was a case where the man was accused of trying to kill his wife with the snakes that he used in his church. The Church of Jesus with Signs Following. Did I get that right, Kelly?
That is correct.
Really?
Well, I've read it two ways. I've read The Church of Jesus with Signs Following, mm-hmm. and I've read it The Church of God with Signs Following. However, the church that exists there today does not have either name as I am reading this and researching this. So at this time, though, it was The Church of Jesus with Signs Following. It's based on the scripture that you heard at the beginning.
Right. John 16.
Yes, Mark chapter 16, verse 17, 18.
Yes. We also have readings from Luke chapter 10, verse 19. Mm-hmm. They also use the book of Acts, chapter 28, verses 1 through 6, as I guess, what would be the word?
It's their theology.
Biblical
it's the
backing
way,
for right. their practice and their
it's
religion.
It's their interpretation
Correct.
Of those, to them, significant verses in the Bible that lead them, they think, the clearest, straightest path to life after death.
Correct. And all of those books are found in the New Testament of the Bible, which is the second part of the Bible. If you have a copy of the Holy Bible, you have the Old Testament and the New Testament. And those books that we just mentioned and that we read at the beginning of this podcast are located in the New Testament. This is their scripture that they use. Okay, go ahead, Scott.
Well, you just reminded me of something that I found when I was reading through this book about the case today, and it's just a short paragraph, and it's an interview with someone who worked, or I keep saying working, someone who worshipped at this church at the time this was all going on, and I thought it was a really succinct explanation of exactly what was going through the mind of people who exhibited their religion by handling live rattlesnakes. So it's really short. Let me read it.
Okay,
we can always cut it out if it sucks, right?
No, go ahead.
And this is from a member of the church who knew Glenn Summerford and Darlene Summerford and was interviewed for this book because he had some inside information about the workings of the church. And so here's what he says briefly. A lot of people are against handling serpents, but when that anointing is there, it's real. When you get bit is when you do it without being anointed. One day I was at church and the Lord told me to grab the snake. And then the Lord said to me, but don't take it from Glenn, referring to Glenn Summerford. And he said that was because I had more faith in Glenn than I did in the Lord, and the Lord knew that. And he knew that I wouldn't take it from anyone's hand other than Glenn. But I made Glenn lay the snake down in the chair, and then I picked it up. Because if I hadn't done what God said, I would have been bitten. So I had to do what God said, even though I didn't think that was the right thing to do. So that's...
Wow.
Just a brief glimpse inside the mind of the people who interpret the Bible the way that we've discussed. And
what book is that from?
This is a book called The Serpent and the Spirit. It's the Glenn Summerford story. It's written by Thomas Burton, 2004, the University of Tennessee, Knoxville Press. And I just got it 2 days ago, and I breezed through. It's hard to explain how that book is written. It's not written as a narrative. It's a summary of interviews with people who were involved in the case. Either Doris Summerford's interviewed, Glenn Summerford himself is interviewed multiple times. Children that are members of the family, of the Summerford family, there are people who go to church there, like the caption or the quote I just read. So there's a lot of really good information that you don't get when you watch the 24-minute YouTube reenactment from Animal Planet that I watched earlier today, which was just terrible. Just basic facts were gotten wrong.
Did you say Animal Planet?
It was on Animal Planet. It was a YouTube video that had the Animal Planet logo. I know I did. I made the same face you're making right now.
Animal Planet does documentaries?
They did at this time.
Wow.
Maybe 15
know that.
Years
old. Okay. No, no, I'm with you. I'm with you.
But it was 24 shocked. Minutes long, and I watched it, and I thought, wow, this is terrible. So I was glad that I had some other source of information to bring to the podcast, but that's the way these people think, and that's the way Glenn Summerford thought, and that's the way that Darlene Summerford thought. And there were a lot of aspects of their lives that weren't holy, but they felt like if they drifted off the path, what's the term that I'm looking for, that when somebody...
When you backslide.
Mm-hmm. When you backslide, you can always get right with the Lord again. You just have to go through the process again and get right with the Lord and be rebaptized, and then you can go and handle snakes again and have every certainty that you will not be bitten. But the way they believe is, if you get bitten, then you did something wrong, that you're not right with the Lord.
Mm-hmm. So, and did it say anything about the practice once you get bitten? Is there something that you do?
Well, they certainly don't believe in medical attention. I've seen videos from those documentaries and the Alabama snake video that's on HBO right now, and they don't believe that it's necessary to seek medical attention. They think that the Lord will take care of you, and so you sit there. Or in the case of Glenn Summerford, one time he got bitten by two snakes in one night, a copperhead and a diamondback rattler in the same night, and they took him home, and he spent 4 days on the floor with the entire congregation taking turns taking care of him, and all of them thinking he was going to die at any moment. But he didn't, and that just reaffirmed that congregation's faith in him, that he was the person that they should be listening to, and that just made him that more of a... of the pastor that they followed at the Church of Jesus with Signs Following.
And that's powerful when you believe, and the narrative that you read is very powerful. To hear that from a member of the congregation, it gives you direct insight into the mindset, the human condition that we're dealing with, mm-hmm. why so many of his congregation, from the documentary Alabama Snake on sure. HBO, mm-hmm. we're still in support.
still to this day,
Glenn Summerford?
It's not hard to find somebody that thinks he didn't do it. And the two of you don't have to look very far to find someone who thinks he didn't do it.
We are brought to you by Easy Street Restaurant, Bar, and Performance Hall. So what do you drink when you go there?
Usually it's something with vodka in it, depending on who the bartender is. If I'm the bartender, I usually forget to pour the liquor into the drink. That's why I'm not a very good bartender. They only let me bartend from 11 to 12 on Saturdays.
I would be so mad at you if I just got a glass of tonic water.
I've done it to myself.
I love, they have a mango beer.
I'm not much of a beer guy.
Mango cart.
I'm more of the bottom shelf on the liquor cabinet kind of guy.
If I'm pouring, I don't forget the liquor. I'm a tequila soda kind of person.
Well, you can, I mean, if you've got a bottle of tequila in your hand, you can smell it. So there's no forgetting to pour tequila.
There is no forgetting the tequila.
Right, right. So on Easy Street, when you've arrived.
Yes.
What do you eat there, Scott?
Oh, gosh. Usually it's something on the burgers menu. I really like the sliders, which is sort of a gourmet crystal burger. It's the onions and the pickles and the mustard on the little square buns, but it's a nice handmade piece of beef that comes on all three of the burgers, and you get waffle fries. The salads are delicious.
Nothing goes better with alcohol than some sort of fancy version of a crystal.
Or, yes. I mean, if you can find one, that's great. I've settled for the regular old crystal burger many times.
I love the Philly.
Oh, yeah, the Philly.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Very good sandwich.
Yes, and I love all the salads and the fish.
Mm-hmm. Salad.
I get side eye for that.
So thank you so much, Easy Street. We are so excited to be partnering with you for this. And you give us the stage 2 nights a month. It's so awesome for us to be able to do our live podcast there. And we get to meet with some folks who love true crime the way that we do.
And hopefully don't throw tomatoes.
And now back to the show.
Okay, so I do like getting that insight from the congregation, and it helps you to approach this the appropriate way, to understand
yes.
a group of people. You must approach them with humility
yeah.
and respect, and this is how we definitely wanted to handle this case.
I think it's easy to make fun of this case, and I think a lot of the media that covered this case in the 90s, the New York Times covered this case. This case made appearances on Sally Jesse Raphael, which was a syndicated afternoon talk show at the time, that basically made fun of people from different areas of the country. I think it reinforced a lot of people's beliefs in other parts of the country that this is what everybody in Alabama must be like. We must all go to church and handle snakes and jump up and down and do things in an unorthodox manner on Sundays. That's just the impression that a lot of people have, and this story reinforced it, and I think that's why it became a case that received nationwide attention for months.
Right, and we are not...
Because of the novelty of it.
Correct, and because we're from this area, we're not going to approach it the same way.
Not at all.
Because we live in this area,
yeah.
and, you know, we
I know somebody who's been to that church.
Well, right, we only recently got indoor plumbing. However, we are pretty high-tech now. So, Scott, using our high-tech equipment here, let's continue the story.
All right. So where did I get to? So the story is about this incident that happened in October of 1991. And you'd have to go back a little bit and learn a little bit about both of these people. Glenn and Darlene Summerford, it was his second marriage. I think her first as well, or her second as well. They'd been married for a while. When Glenn Summerford was a younger man, he'd gotten into a lot of trouble as a young boy. He'd learned to fight from his father, his stepfather, actually. Who had been in the special forces in the army. He spent a lot of his time as a youth getting involved in fights and being a ruffian. And at one point in his late teen years, in 18, 19, 20, he spent time actually, I don't know if you would call it the fighting circuit, but he went to New York City and Chicago and fought other people illegally for money and really got to be someone who had a reputation as being someone that you didn't mess with. He'd gotten into trouble with the law several times. He'd gotten into enough trouble that he had a couple of felonies on his record when he was accused of what he did, accused of what he was accused of doing to Darlene Summerford. So he, at some point, he found the Lord. He became someone who felt led to handle serpents and he started a church. It was, he'd just gotten into a big fight with some friends of his, and they asked him to come and pray with him. And he said that the Lord reached out to him and spoke to him and told him that this was something that he had been called to do. And by accounts of family members of his that I've read since we've started researching this, for a long time he had found the Lord, and he didn't do the things that he used to do anymore. He didn't fight. He didn't. There's some uncertainty about whether or not he still drank, and it depends on who you ask. Darlene says he did. He says he didn't. But for a long time, he led a good life, and I think it, at some point, like happens in a lot of marriages, this one just started to wilt on the vine a little bit, and because of the lives they lived and the way they led their lives, there weren't a lot of options for them to separate from each other. If Darlene had already lost a child to the foster care system because she'd been in trouble with the law as a young person, many times, bad checks. There were some allegations of prostitution at some point. I mean, she wasn't a very good soul either, if we're going to stick to the biblical line here. But it just was a situation where they both wanted out of it, but they were both involved in their religion enough, at least Glenn was, that he didn't want to get a divorce for any reason other than adultery. So if he could prove that she had slept with someone else, and that was a common refrain amongst the people at this church at the time, that she was a little promiscuous. But Glenn always in the end trusted in the Lord to lead him the right way. So he didn't fight anymore, and he didn't beat up anyone who was accused of sleeping with his wife anymore, like he might have in earlier years. He relied on the Lord to give everybody the forgiveness that they asked for if they chose to. That, at least that's his story about what happened that weekend, because what Darlene says happened that weekend is that he beat her up because she admitted to having slept with some other congregants of the church, and he intended to kill her because of what she had told him. And so he held a gun to her head and forced her to go out to the shed behind their house and stick her hand in a box full of rattlesnakes and be bitten. And it was only because she was able to, again, this is her account, get him drunk on vodka and have him pass out on the couch, that she was able to call an ambulance and escape from that situation. And they really didn't, they never saw each other again after that, except in court. So that's the disparate stories from the two of them about what happened that night.
Okay. Then we have the ambulance shows up. That's where the kind of where the documentary from HBO begins, is the ambulance is picking her up as she's struggling to make it down the road, and they're able to eventually, they have to take her to Birmingham. Is that correct?
Yeah. She starts out in a hospital in Scottsboro, and there's no antivenin at that hospital. So they, by ambulance, transport her to UAB Hospital in Birmingham, which, if you're not from Alabama, that's, if you get sent to UAB, that's the best place we have here in Alabama to send you. You have a serious problem if you're on your second hospital and it's to UAB. So, yeah, she went there.
And they were able to save her life there.
They were, yes and no. I mean, there is some dispute about how much danger her life was really in. I mean, there are people who were there in the hospital with her that night who will say that she was sitting up in the bed and laughing about the entire thing.
Wow.
It just depends on which member of the Summerford family you ask, or the extended Summerford family.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Well, I'm just.
But
I'm,
yes, she made it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm also going on the documentary, and the EMTs from their interview in mm-hmm. the documentary.
Right.
And they say she was in bad shape.
They do. And you know, you're certainly inclined to believe a third-party observer who has no dog in the fight, and the first two people who saw her thought, wow, this woman's in big danger. Her hand's all swollen up. She's obviously scuffed up from crawling down her driveway because she couldn't walk. So that makes her story believable just because of the ambulance drivers and their testimony or their accounting of what happened. At the end of it, there's no way to know what happened that night because the only two people were there tell completely different stories about what happened, and the jury believed one and not the other.
And that's always tricky,
right?
When you're dealing with a case and when you're talking about a case, that is always a tricky part. So you mentioned they did not see each other again until they were in court.
Yeah.
Correct?
That's right. Okay. That's the way I understand it. Yes.
Katie, tell us about the trial.
Well, there's not a whole lot to talk about with the trial because it lasted a total of 2.5 days.
Two and a half days.
That's pretty fast, even in Alabama.
Yes.
Okay. All right, I'm with you.
So, you know, this crime took place on October 4th, 1991, and Glenn Summerford was arrested for attempted murder. So fast forward, we're in February of 1992 when the trial actually takes place. And 2.5 days later, he is convicted of attempted murder.
How long did the jury, was there a jury?
There was.
There was a jury.
Okay, did they
It was like a...
Is that what that's called?
It was a 2 days of trial, a half a day of jury deliberation, I think is how the time frame broke down.
That's what I was trying to find.
Gotcha.
It was 6 hours.
And as Scott mentioned earlier, since Glenn had 2 prior felonies, Alabama is a habitual offender state, which means 3 strikes, you're out. So on his 3rd felony, he was automatically sentenced to 99 years in prison. So off he goes. His congregation, like I said, you know, still to this day, didn't think he should have been convicted. Yes.
Just about. I mean, I'm sure there's somebody who thinks, yeah, that guy. But the ones they show on television, they don't think he did it.
Like I said, the defense had one good witness. Well, obviously not too good. Her name was Tammy Flippo. She testified to the opposite story, which was that Darlene was bit trying to bring the snake to Glenn to bite him.
Yeah, because he's passed out on the couch because of all the vodka she gave him. Yes,
passed out on the couch and says that, you know, Darlene was bringing the snake to him to bite him to try to kill him and got bit in the process. But there also came to light during the trial that there seemed to be a relationship between Miss Flippo and Glenn Summerford. People had seen
there
her.
There is some indication of that in the information that I've read.
People had seen her staying the night at the house, not going home for several days. So
to her husband.
Yes.
Let's make be clear.
So
she was not single at the time.
She was not a very credible witness on most accounts.
So she's easily picked apart.
Exactly. On the stand. Yes. So he, like I said, is sentenced to 99 years. And funny story is about 11 years into that, he is on work detail and he tries to escape. He's gone for about 45 minutes. They found him in a dumpster.
Yeah.
He's sentenced to 30 more years. So he, you know.
That sounds like just the opportunity suddenly presented itself and he thought, hey, I'll make a run for it. Because I can't imagine that his escape plan, if he'd had a second to think about it, would have been hide in a dumpster.
Yeah. 45 whole minutes on the lam, but. Yeah. 30 more years.
And he got that was in March of whatever year that was, 2004. And in May of that year, he finally got a parole hearing. Guess how that went?
I'm going to say he did not.
2 months after his escape attempt. And you know what? Who knows? He might have had a shot.
The fact that they still gave him the hearing after the escape attempt is amazing.
Well, I don't know how long it lasted. That may have been a very quickly opened and closed meeting, but yeah.
So he tries to escape. He's quickly brought back. He's given almost or just a little over a year per minute correct.
Wow, I hadn't thought about it that way before, but yeah.
Yeah, and so then what happens?
Yes, Mr. Summerford, he is still in prison to this day. He actually has dementia now, so he's not actively attempting to get any parole hearings at this time. They've went all this time still holding on to their 2 separate stories.
Yeah, and I guess it doesn't matter anymore. We're crying over spilt milk. Even if he was released tomorrow, he wouldn't be the same person that he was.
He'd be released to a nursing home.
Right.
Probably.
It also makes sense why there's not been a lot of interviews with him with documentaries or books. Yeah, or
the most recent information I have, interviews with Glenn Summerford, are 15 years old. So.
Correct.
Exactly. I think his mental health has been declining for a while.
So we have 2 people. We have 2 different stories of what happened that night. And we know how the courts voted.
Right.
They unanimous.
Pretty much sent him in. And I think that probably had a lot to do with his previous crimes. They were very violent.
Absolutely.
And he was deemed a pretty violent man in his past.
Well,
Is that right, Scott? You're kind of looking at me like, I don't think so.
I didn't know this until 2 hours ago. I was reading through the last pages of this book. It turns out, you know, if you watch the Alabama Snake documentary, it seems like they tell the story about him beating up one fellow so bad that his eye came out of his head. That wasn't what he was sentenced for earlier in his life. There were two convictions that he had. One was for stealing a boat. And his version of the story is that the guy they borrowed the boat from, he and his teenage buddies, the guy gave them permission to borrow it and then got drunk and forgot that he told them that they could borrow it. And the second one was for an incident where he went over to a lady's house to buy some moonshine. Again, as a young man, 18, 19, 20 years old, and she wasn't home. So they went in and got the moonshine and left. And I don't know how you get convicted for stealing something that is illegal to have in the beginning, but according to Glenn Summerford's version of the story, those were the two things that they wadded up into a ball and accused him of having committed two felonies earlier in his life that they used to pin the habitual offender law on him. And there's no contradiction in this book, and this is a one-sided book. I'm not saying those are the facts. I'm saying that's Glenn Summerford's version of the story that I read earlier today.
Okay, because it was my understanding that his previous convictions were very violent.
And, you know, I did research and tried to find what his previous convictions were on, and I couldn't find specifics on his previous
felonies.
Again,
his version of the facts. So
the courts were just going on the fact that it was a felony.
Right.
They were both felonies.
Yes, that's it. That is all it states in this case, is that he had two prior felonies. And you can clearly see that this court had its mind made up about him when he walked in, from just the fact of the case or the trial lasted as long as it did. And
one of the interviews in this book is from a local journalist, and I forget which local paper it was from, and it's a short one, but he basically says what Katie just said. They knew how this was going to go. The defense attorney and the judge and the prosecuting attorney would go into a room and they would talk for 30 minutes and they would come out, and then a bunch of motions would get denied. And I'm paraphrasing, but basically, his argument was he was railroaded. Glenn Summerford was railroaded because they wanted to get rid of him because they didn't want snake handling churches in Scottsboro.
I was going to ask that. Do we think that there was it was because of his religious practice?
Yeah. And they just used the fact that he'd had those two prior felonies, and he'd lived in the same place his whole life. Everybody knew everybody. The cops knew each other. It's kind of like our little small town, except no snake handling churches that I'm aware of. But same thing. Everybody knows everybody. This was just one of the guys that most of them felt like, or always remembered as, having been a troublemaker, despite, I don't know how much they believe this whole, you found religion, you're a good person now. I remember what you were like for the first 20 years of your life. I'll believe it when I see it. So when they had a chance to put him under the jail, they took it. That's what this journalist said.
Well, we do know some denominations of Christianity can be very judgmental of other denominations and their practices.
That's true. Yeah. Do we know if there was any issues that Glenn Summerford had with anyone related to the courts?
Yeah, there's actually one. His defense attorney, to hear Glenn Summerford tell it in this book today, his defense attorney, the guy's last name was Lackey, L-A-C-K-E-Y. That's what I remember. And when he was a young man, he lived next door to Darlene, and they dated as teenagers. I don't think that ever got brought up in any legal. Okay. I mean, you can't do anything in the court system with that, but I think that Glenn Summerford said that to imply that I always felt like I wasn't getting a fair shake from this guy because he knew Darlene when they were kids. That was the only implication that was really clearly made, but, you know.
Okay.
That's sort of an answer to your question. That's the closest one there is.
It makes an eyebrow raise,
yeah,
for sure.
Both of mine.
Of course, when you get in a town like ours in Scottsboro's, I mean, if you're from there, you knew someone as a kid.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah, how much does that really play into it? But that's always something that you could wave in the air and say, hey, I didn't really do it, and this is why they railroaded me. But there were people who thought that. Certainly the congregation, this journalist who was quoted in the book, and obviously the man who has spent the last, 30 years of his life in prison. Yeah.
29.
Right. I rounded up.
I just know because this was the year before I was born, and I am not 30 yet.
Ah, okay.
There we go.
All right.
The youngster, again.
She could probably get it down to the day if we asked her.
So, Katie, I'm going to put you on the spot just a little bit. We know that certainly when this trial happened and leading up to it, that it was not illegal to handle poisonous snakes in the state of Alabama. I know there are some states who have outlawed this. The practice still occurs in the churches because I've been able to do a quick Google and find them to this day, even found some of them on Facebook. Is it illegal in the state of Alabama?
Yes.
So
really
currently it is illegal.
You are not, it's illegal to have the snakes.
To have them in your possession.
Yes.
Poisonous
like,
snakes.
Yes. It has to do with owning the animals themselves. It doesn't really have to do with the religious practice, but
well they had to find a way around that, because if you say you can't be a church that handles snakes, then you violate someone's First Amendment rights, right? So you've got to make it illegal
right
to own
well
a snake.
It's and it has to do with the selling and like the distribution of the illegal snakes. So I guess your workaround could be, I found this in the yard,
right?
Well, we have a lot of poisonous snakes here in the state of Alabama.
Maybe an exotic animals kind of thing where you also can't have a live tiger in your backyard, I'm assuming, although in
I don't think they're
it would be open to interpretation, right? If you wanted to pass the law and try to avert any First Amendment conflicts, maybe you say exotic animal. But again, Katie said, hell, I'm sure there's a live rattlesnake in my backyard right now.
We have a lot of rattlesnakes. Yeah. We have copperheads. Mm-hmm. What else do we have here in the state of Alabama?
Oh, it was legal at the time that
time,
but
so they're not.
In 2001 is when it, because it was it's a restricted species permit.
There we go, restricted species. So they found a way around the First Amendment.
Permit.
Yes, like you remember like the snake guy that always comes to the school.
Now we've got to explain that, guys.
Oh,
here in Cherokee County and probably counties in this area, and I don't know where that guy was from, but there used to be a guy who would come and the entire school would assemble in the gymnasium, and this guy would he would have big boxes and he would bring out rattlesnakes and boa constrictors and at the end, Katie, did you do this? Did you ever get to go down to the floor and hold the snake? Because
yes. Oh, I was fighting for it.
Kelly, did you?
Yes, I did.
Never did. I never got to. But guys, for those of you who've never seen it, the last act of the night is he goes to this big box and it's like a 10-15 foot boa constrictor, and it takes five or six guys, and he just pulls the head out and here you go with that, keep going. It's like you're taking a couch through a narrow hallway. Here you hold some, you hold some, and by the time you get finished there's 15 foot of boa constrictor being held by five students that, and they're all just grossed out, or maybe they love it or whatever. But anyway, that's the snake guy.
Yes,
and so he had a special
at the time, I guess he didn't have to have a special permit, because when we were in elementary school.
Well, it still happened when I was in school, too. And that was after 2001
He would have to have a special permit in order to have the poisonous snakes.
The year that I graduated from high school, he did not need a permit.
Yes, and see, we know that, Scott. But, you know.
Same here.
I think that I need to clarify a little bit, because the actual, I think, statute says that you can't have poisonous snakes that are not native to Alabama.
Okay, so no asps.
And we have some native.
We have several in
So that's the workaround.
Okay, so I guess it's not illegal to have a rattlesnake. Because, again, there's got to be one around me somewhere. I mean,
I've always been interested in when you start talking about cases like this and watching documentaries and things, you never see PETA anywhere.
Right.
Is it because it's a snake?
Maybe.
Do they care about snakes? Does anybody know? I'm not familiar.
I don't know.
With PETA. I don't know anyone who's in the organization, but I would think the way that they're stored.
If you're a PETA person and you're listening to today's
help
us understand this, please. Seriously.
Have you guys reached out or tried to look into this?
What is your policy on poisonous snakes?
Correct. Because they're kept in very small boxes.
Yeah, they're animals too, right?
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I don't know all the conditions. I know what I've seen in videos.
Boy, again, if your husband listens to this podcast, he's really going to roll his eyes when he hears me say rattlesnakes are animals, too.
He is going to roll his eyes.
He is, right? Hey, KT, sorry about that. Tell me if he listens, or he'll let me know, I guess, right?
He'll let you know. Okay, so we know now that it is illegal to have those, yet we still have the churches are around today. They're still active, still practicing their religion, practicing their what they feel like they're anointed to do.
Right,
to
anointed is the word. And can you give me a good one-sentence definition of anointed? Does that just mean that you feel empowered by the Holy Spirit, consumed by the Holy Spirit?
Correct. Okay. It is when you are anointed by God, you're chosen. So when he's talking about God telling him to do
this. So in these brief moments when he feels anointed to handle a snake and have no fear of being bitten, or to drink strychnine, or Katie, what are some, they drink strychnine, they feel like they can touch people and heal them. Isn't that one of the things
all of
that
those
we read
go
in those
back
Bible
to
verses,
those,
right?
Back to the verses,
back to the verses at the beginning.
So when you feel like hands of healing, that, when you feel like you've received that anointing, you're not scared of a live rattlesnake.
No.
You think God's going to protect me from
it. No. And if you, as you were reading the narrative, you are this gentleman and you feel this conversation with God happening, and you truly feel that God has commanded you to do this.
Yeah. And he said,
it's a strong feeling.
He said it in that passage, and Glenn Summerford says it at one point in the book. He said, when God speaks to me, it's just like you're talking to me. So when they hear a voice just like you hear my voice right now.
Yes.
I've never had that happen, but wow, what an experience that must be if you have had it happen.
It must be. Yeah. And there have been several studies on what goes on. These churches have been looked at. Sociologists, psychologists have been fascinated with these churches for years.
Mm-hmm.
They observe the services. They talk with them. They're looking into this behavior to try to understand the human condition, as I stated earlier, and psychological studies have been conducted and looking at the way the brain operates when one is in the moment and feeling anointed by God and taking up the serpent. And it is the same reaction in your brain. It works on your reward pathway, which is your dopamine, which is a chemical in your brain, which is a reward pathway.
So it's like a roller coaster.
It is the part of your brain that tells you this is a good idea. We want to continue doing this. It reinforces you to continue the behavior. And these practices work on that very part of the brain. And so there's studies and they've shown, brain scans and things that are going on during that time. And it is an experience.
Yeah.
So that
it's like chocolate.
Chocolate works on that.
Or vodka,
as well,
if you're so inclined.
All right, Scott, I know you have been dying to tell us the entire time.
I have.
What do you really think about this case? Do you think Glenn Summerford is telling the truth, or do you think Darlene Summerford is telling the truth?
I think they're both telling their version of the truth, but at the end of the day, I think, and again, this is a biased opinion that I have. I haven't read the Darlene Summerford story. I have read the Glenn Summerford story, but I've seen the documentary and done some other research. I don't think, nobody in Glenn Summerford's family thinks that he bore any ill will towards Darlene because of his religion. Despite all of the bad things that she had done, she'd slept around with other people who were in the same congregation. According to everybody in the family, Glenn would never, once he found the Lord, he would never not forgive her or them, because that's just how deeply religious he was. And so the notion that he would try and kill her because she had slept around on him defies explanation or defies logic to his family. And I'm just inclined, he's never changed his story. Her story changed a lot. We'll never know what happened. Whether he did it or not, I don't think he should have spent the rest of his life in prison. There are murderers who didn't spend as much time in prison as Glenn Summerford has.
What do you think, Kelly?
Yeah, Kelly.
I can see your face.
I know.
She's dying to tell us.
No, I'm really, this is so hard for me. Oh, okay. So my thought process is this.
I thought you were saying duck goose for a second.
No, okay. No, I was not saying that. I'm just trying to get my thoughts together because this one is so confusing. Did he have proof of all of these affairs?
Her own admission.
She did admit to them.
In front of other witnesses, including his own two sons, she admitted on several occasions. And their general explanation or their rationale for her to do that was she was trying to get him to get into trouble, to get into a fight with one of the guys that she would accuse him or admit to having slept with in front of him, so that he would get in a fight, that he would lean back on his past and become violent again and get himself arrested, and then she could leave him.
So all of that motivation is for her to be able to leave
him. Yeah, and again, like you said, it's such a convoluted story. Mm-hmm. He says he would never divorce her or he wanted to divorce her, but he would never hurt her for her infidelity because it was all in the hands of the Lord to him. And she says, no, he's been trying to kill me for months. So it's just one of those he said, she says, and they believed her.
Okay. Did she ever have any bruises, any scars, anything from, alleged being beaten up, being abused?
I don't think Glenn Summerford would ever have denied the fact that he slapped his wife around. In fact, I know that he admits it in the book that I read today, but to hear him tell it, that was never anything that he did out of a sense of trying to inflict any long-term damage. That was just the way he dealt with his anger, and we all know that doesn't make it right, but this is in the 90s and 80s in rural Alabama, and things were different then, and still are in some places.
Had she asked for a divorce, and he had refused?
She didn't want the divorce because...
What's she going to do?
Well,
there's no life for her to go to in a divorce from him.
But the way that Glenn Summerford could have made it right in his heart to divorce her would have been to accuse her of adultery.
Which she had admitted to,
but she didn't want to receive she didn't want the implications of that to rain down on her, which would have been that she would have been ostracized from the community and she wouldn't have gotten custody of their 12-year-old son, Marty. Okay. She'd already lost one son to the foster care system. And if she got divorced again because she'd been accused of adultery, she would lose a second son.
Okay.
Reasons for not wanting a divorce. Okay. She needed him to go away, but not through the legal system. And at least not through a divorce.
He's not saying he wanted a divorce. He was not entertaining that.
No,
idea.
He said, I'll divorce you, but I'm going to accuse you of adultery in the paperwork, and that means I'll get the boy.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Sorry, I should have wrapped that up a little bit
better. No, that's good.
Conflicting motivations answered. Going on in that house that Saturday night when she says, he tried to kill me, and he says, what the hell happened? I've been passed out on the couch drunk all night.
Okay.
And I wake up and my wife's gone.
Okay. So here's what I think. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very. I have no idea. This is one of those cases where one day I'm thinking about it and I think, oh, he did it. He did it.
I know what you mean. Him.
And then the other day I'm going, no, I think maybe that story, it makes sense that she was bringing the snake to get it to bite him while he was passed out.
Right.
I know this is maddening, and I've built up to nothing. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea who's innocent or who's guilty.
There was
guilty
no
here.
Cherry on the top of this sundae.
No, absolutely not. Katie,
drum roll. Just kidding.
I
absolutely don't think he did it.
All right.
Oh.
All right.
Okay. And I don't.
Wow.
I watched the documentary with my husband, which I hate to admit is usually a really good judge of character, and it's probably his line of work that helps with that. The second he sat down, he didn't want to watch it. He hates watching all TV, I suggest. He sat down and he said, oh, that got him. That's not how that happened.
Did he know the case?
Not really, no.
He just watched it.
He watched it a little bit, and he said, that's...
Yeah,
her story kept changing.
Right.
How she said it, he was like, that's not how that happened, because that's a clear cut night for her to remember, and there's obviously a different story. Mm-hmm. And then we went into it, and I always want to take the opposite side of his,
right?
But the more
always fun in a marriage.
Yes.
Always fun.
But that is the more I looked into it and the more I researched it, and the more I feel that he didn't get a fair, I won't say an unfair trial, but
he didn't get a competent defense.
I can agree with that for sure. Based on what you guys have told me and my own research.
Yeah, there's a sequence in the book where he talks about the fact that he had a dozen witnesses, defense witnesses, in a room waiting for their turn to be called to testify in court. And Lackey, the attorney, said, no, we don't need any of these guys. It's fine. They're not going to send you to jail for 99 years. Well, I want to testify, Glenn Summerford said. Oh, no, that'd be a terrible idea. We don't want you to testify. And he got the worst possible sentence he could get. So it kind of makes the defense attorney look like he was incompetent because he had all these potential tools.
Exactly. And he, you know, he never had an appeal. He never had any kind of resentencing. 99 years for attempted murder simply because of that three strike rule. Mm-hmm. And because
he stole a boat and some moonshine when he was 18.
Like Scott mentioned, there are way worse offenders. Let's just say he did do it. That have spent a lot less time in prison.
Yeah. Hell, I've stolen a boat. I brought it back, though.
He's kidding. Listener, he's kidding.
It was my uncle's. I brought it back. Statute of limitations. He can't do anything about
this. This story is wild, and it is very confusing, and we'll never really know exactly what happened. And unfortunately, we'll never get to continue to hear Glenn's side because he's no longer able or capable of doing an interview. But he is still in prison, and that's where he'll remain.
Absolutely, yes. And that's either sad or it's justified, and we don't know.
Sometimes it's not clear cut. I know last week we were all in agreeance on, you know what.
Yeah, it was different last week.
It really was. And that's okay. That'll happen.
This is a hard one to put your finger on. It's just kind of your...
I can't say one way or the other.
I've gone back and forth 3 or 4 times. Ask me again tomorrow after the memory of this book that I finished reading today has faded, and I may go back to the other one.
This has been the second episode of True Crime on Easy Street. Guys, how do you feel
after episode number 2? I think it's all downhill from here. I mean, we've gotten the bugs all worked out and, you know, gotten the cooties shaken off. I think it's going to be easy peasy from here on out.
Well, I think this was a great second case. It's really wild. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
But it really highlights Appalachian culture, which I think is something people don't understand they're not from where we are.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, and we wanted to do, when we all sat down and talked about this before we ever bought these microphones or got this table or these awesome chairs, we wanted to do something that was us. You know, we wanted to stick to stories that were in the northeast part of Alabama, northwest Georgia, and kind of make it a show. It's easy to skip around the country. We could do the Kennedy assassination next week if we wanted to, but I think there's plenty of awesome material for a true crime podcast within a 50-mile radius of where we're sitting. I think I said the same thing last week, and I just think that we can stick with this for quite a while, and I'm excited to learn. I'm learning things as we go, so I feel like a lot of our listeners will as well.
Yes, I've enjoyed all of the feedback. Thank you so much for listening to us and giving us that good feedback. We do take it to heart. And I would be interested in doing an update on this case down the road.
Yeah.
And I would love to hear, Katie, what Shane's defense would have been Summerford.
I'd love to
get him in here and have him tell us what he would have done differently.
We could always have a little 2-minute update segment right at the end. Anything that we've already talked about, if there's something new or Shane wants to jump in, he's one of our sponsors. So if he wants to jump in and blabber, we'll certainly, I'll get up and let him sit here. He can use this microphone.
Don't call him a sponsor just because he bought these microphones. He doesn't need that.
All right.
Thank you, Shane.
Yeah, like he needed that.
All right. Well, don't forget to like, rate, subscribe, leave us a review. You can find us wherever you're listening right now. And tune back next week. We try to get these uploaded on Wednesdays. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, all the good social media platforms. We'll post some sneak peeks of what's coming up and where you can listen.
Thank you for joining us.
See you next time.
Have a good week.
Yeah, good week, everybody.